Greetings, and bienvenue, Midnight Crew. Thank you for returning to this broadcast. And welcome to new viewers joining us for the first time. If you like a video, then feel free to subscribe.
The reality of the Hyborian Age. Know, O Prince, that between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the gleaming cities, and the years of the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world like blue mantles beneath the stars. Robert E. Howard. John Milius, director of Conan the Barbarian, 1982, related the following story about Robert E. Howard, author of the Conan stories. He is alone one night and he feels this shadow overtake him from behind, and he knows that Conan is standing behind him with a large axe. Conan tells him, "Stay there and write, and if you don't do exactly what I am going to tell you, I am going to cleave you down the middle." He is so terrified because Conan exudes such power and fear, and he can see the axe glinting in his peripheral vision, that he writes all night. With the coming of dawn, he turns around finally and Conan is gone. So he falls upon the floor completely spent, and he realizes, "I only have to sleep a few hours because then I must fortify myself, for when darkness comes again, so will Conan." And of course Conan did return, and he wrote almost all of these stories in this very short period of time because Conan was standing over him with an axe. Was the Hyborian Age that Robert E. Howard envisioned real? Was Howard visited by the spirit of one of its greatest heroes and given glimpses of its events thousands of years later? What can we learn from and about this age undreamed of? Glancing briefly at the peoples of that age, the dominant Hyborians are no longer uniformly tawny-haired and gray-eyed. They have mixed with other groups, but this mixing has not weakened them. The Shemites are men of medium height with dark eyes and blue-black beards. The ruling classes of Stygia are tall men, dusky and straight-featured. The Hyrcanians are dark and generally tall and slender. The people of Nordheim retain their light skin, blue eyes, and red or yellow hair. The Picts are the same type as they always were, short, very dark with black eyes and hair. The Cimmerians are tall and powerful, with dark hair and blue or gray eyes. South of Stygia are the vast kingdoms of the Amazons, the Cushites, the Atlians, and the hybrid empire of Zimbabwe. Between Aquilonia and the Pictish wilderness lie the Bosonian Marches, peopled by descendants of an aboriginal race mixed with Hyborians. They are stubborn fighters and great archers, as they must be to have survived centuries of warfare with the barbarians to the north and west. This then was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world like blue mantles beneath the stars. Robert E. Howard, The Hyborian Age.
I never got what happened to all the Hyborians. Howard said the Cimmerians became Celts, and the Aesir and Vanir became Nords, etc., but never specified what happened to the based civilized people like the Aquilonians.
Howard simply set up and revealed the universe and racial or spiritual boundaries of the Hyborian Age. What happened to them beyond the age of Conan is beyond his revealed knowledge. The big questions for us should be, does Howard's revelation correspond to ancient history? If Howard's vision is true, what does this tell us about our current degenerate civilization, and how might we overcome it in order to better understand our pre-civilizational ancestral state?
I do realize that, but I find his commentary on civilization and themes intensely dumb, and therefore just try to enjoy his settings as fun escapism.
In what way do you find his commentary on civilization dumb? One might make such a claim if one were to agree with the tenets of Maoist communism. Otherwise, the idea that bureaucratic and convoluted civilizational structures are more harmful to the human spirit than our tribal structures seems completely legitimate. At the spiritual or paranormal level, Conan exemplifies the actual spirit of the noble savage, in contrast to the liberal European understanding from the 19th century. Conan understands that advanced civilization inevitably leads to corruption and stagnation. Despite being a king, he pines for the days when he was a lawless mercenary. As regulations place limits on what he can accomplish as ruler, he is emaciated. However, the responsibility of this power leads him to ultimately reject it. He would rather live as the barbarian than be subject to the arbitrary strictures of civilization. It is in his primal state that he is able to truly comprehend the metaphysical nature of reality
Yeah, it's just a fundamental disagreement. I think people suffer a lot more in tribal barbarism than a technologically advanced civilization with the rule of law. I also think civilized societies create smarter and more capable leaders compared to the barbarian kings of the Dark Ages, even in spite of corruption and hedonism. I'd defend my case by saying that even though barbarian rulers proved to be better than the vast majority of Roman nobles at the time, none compared to leaders like Marcus Aurelius or Augustus. I guess it's still good commentary and I shouldn't call it dumb, though.
I think it's obvious from Göbekli Tepe and the rain erosion on the Sphinx, dating it to around the same period, that there was an advanced society long before modern archaeological theories allow. You can't expect me to believe that humans have been around for 200,000 years and only managed to figure out agriculture yesterday. The details of Howard's setting aren't implausible. Maybe the names were changed, though the Sumerians were real. I'd love it if the spirit of an ancient warrior king visited Howard and forced him to chronicle his exploits. I guess it's possible, but it could also be that Conan was an archetype or alternate version of himself created by his psyche that saw the inevitable course of modernity and presented itself in a fever dream.
This understanding seems to me to be the closest. Something about Howard's demeanor opened, contrary to his will, up to the truth regarding past human civilization, and he roughly recorded it in his stories. Conan is indicative of a heroic figure from this age that represents the human spirit. Those who have become enslaved to bureaucracy realize that in primitivism they find true freedom.
We are all reincarnated and we have done this many times. Maybe Robert E. Howard was Conan reborn, telling his own tale.
We are always finding older and older remains. The issue is, beyond 10,000 years, things become difficult to find, simply due to the sea level or erosion, the ice ages, and simply how much the land has changed. Unless something is pretty much sticking right out of the ground, it's almost impossible to find unless it is blind chance. That also leaves behind anything currently underwater. Water levels were lower thousands of years in the past, and since humans often live by rivers and coasts, many settlements will be underwater.
Don't forget basic human activities. If you need stones to build something, ruins are a great source of stone. Farmers and kings have looted most of it.
Base thread. Conan Cole's stories are my favorite when it comes to fantasy, and Howard was a very gifted writer. The thing is that besides his tasteful writing style, he also poured himself into the stories, and so they're full of raw life, and also ancient mysteries. The story of his world goes back and back, so there are many unknowns. Even the ancient and immortal beings do not know what happened before their time, and wonder. He also integrated cosmic horror elements in subtle ways, often even better than his buddy Lovecraft. As for OP's idea, it isn't plausible, as cute as it sounds. Cull is the proto-Conan, and Howard did many self-inserts. In fact, both characters grew out of his discontent with the current world and desire for something pure and genuine. Conan may have been an axe-bearing muse that Howard conjured to tower upon himself. As for this world's history, it goes way back, way beyond what is known. There were great civilizations before the known ones, and humans occupy just a tiny fraction of this little world's lifespan. Long before humans and the known fauna, many other kinds of beings lived here, the original inhabitants, and the scale of their splendor we cannot fathom.
I'm rather of the opinion myself that widespread myths and legends are based on some fact, though the fact may be distorted out of all recognition in the telling. While I don't go so far as to believe that stories are inspired by actually existent spirits or powers, though I am rather opposed to flatly denying anything, I have sometimes wondered if it were possible that unrecognized forces of the past or present or even the future work through the thoughts and actions of living men. This occurred to me when I was writing the first stories of the Conan series especially. I know that for months I had been absolutely barren of ideas, completely unable to work up anything sellable. Then the man Conan seemed suddenly to grow up in my mind without much labor on my part, and immediately a stream of stories flowed off my pen, or rather off my typewriter, almost without effort on my part. I did not seem to be creating, but rather relating events that had occurred. Episode crowded on episode so fast that I could scarcely keep up with them. For weeks I did nothing but write of the adventures of Conan. The character took complete possession of my mind, and crowded out everything else in the way of story writing. When I deliberately tried to write something else, I couldn't do it. I do not attempt to explain this by esoteric or occult means, but the facts remain. I still write of Conan more powerfully and with more understanding than any of my other characters, but the time will probably come when I will suddenly find myself unable to write convincingly of him at all. That has happened in the past with nearly all my rather numerous characters. Suddenly, I would find myself out of contact with the conception, as if the man himself had been standing at my shoulder directing my efforts and had suddenly turned and gone away, leaving me to search for another character. Letter to Clark Ashton Smith, December 14, 1933.
One possible map of the Hyborian Age.
This map is simply a reimagined Europe, Africa, and Asia. Nordheim is Scandinavia. Cimmeria is Germania. Aquilonia is Rome. Pictish Wilderness is Albion, Britannia, and Caledonia. Black Kingdoms is obviously the African continent. Hyperborea is Russia. Vendia is India. Turan is Arabia. Kitai is Japan. Parthenia is China. I mean, it's pretty obvious. He even added Australia and New Zealand as Mu.
You have no idea what you're talking about. It's what the land was before several cataclysms after the sinking of Atlantis. And Mu isn't Australia. Mu is another continent with another civilization much like Atlantis. It's related to Lemuria.
In Howard's vision, the Hyborian Age was not correspondent with the Dark Ages, but with the age before the oceans drank Atlantis. Thus, we are dealing with a time before recorded history. In this time, the civilizations of Earth were many and advanced, though they were still confined by their own technological advancements. This does not, however, prevent them from understanding the deeper tenets of civilizational advancement.
To be honest, R.E. Howard was probably drawing from the dialogue Sanchez of Sias had with Solon in Plato's Timaeus. Thereupon one of the priests, who was of a very great age, said, "O Solon, Solon, you Hellenes are never anything but children, and there is not an old man among you." Solon, in return, asked him what he meant. "I mean to say," he replied, "that in mind you are all young. There is no old opinion handed down among you by ancient tradition, nor any science which is hoary with the age. And I will tell you why. There have been, and will be again, many destructions of mankind arising out of many causes. The greatest have been brought about by the agencies of fire and water, and other lesser ones by innumerable other causes."
God, I love Howard's prose. Evocative doesn't even begin to describe it. But don't undersell his genius. It was his brilliance that took legends of a past we are so distant from. We only know legends and myth, and brought them to life, made them flesh, bone, muscle, and sinew. Those days before civilization robbed us of an untamed wild.
Does anyone have any meta-narrative knowledge on how Howard developed so swiftly in his prose and general world-building? All I tend to find is that he corresponded with Lovecraft, and he, later on, studied into heraldry and world history. I got a collection of Conan stories from a co-editor a while back, and the general scope between the earlier stories and later ones were vastly more detailed. Prose aside, Howard even did his best to drop projection in characterization, and Conan was pretty brilliant in that he can accept mistakes and advice from others.
As far as I know, Howard always wanted to write historical fiction, but the correct referencing of the corresponding historical facts was too much work for him, so he decided to develop a fantasy world. But at that point, he already studied quite a bit of history, and therefore, copied what he liked from reality.
It's funny to see the difference between Howard and Lovecraft. They are opposite. One likes civilization and the other the wild, Texas versus New England. Go Texas team!
One of the reasons that Howard borrowed so heavily from other cultures boiled down to the point that if these people and places did exist, he could avoid chronological errors and conflicts with recorded history by basically having them set in a time before the later cultures we are familiar with emerged, giving them a precursor or ancestral civilization, so that the familiarity was there because the ones we are familiar with, versus the ones so described in the book, are those same later civilizations, which in a nutshell was that history is like a cycle. Some elements of a people are lost, while others are retained. A brilliant piece of literary understanding on Howard's part, and very clever.
Howard placed his stories roughly 10,000 to 15,000 years ago. This would place them in and around the time period of the Younger Dryas catastrophe, which was around 10,500 BC. If such a catastrophe occurred as a result of solar outburst or micronova, with a corresponding tectonic upheaval, there would be very, very little left of any civilizations. Much of anything would be under thick mud.
Between the time Atlantis sank and the rise of the Sons of Arius is 10,000 BC to 5,000 BC. Kull is a bit earlier, before Atlantis sank.
Maybe a little longer ago than that. Pangaea or Pangaea was a supercontinent that existed during the late Paleozoic and early Mesozoic eras. It assembled from the earlier continental units of Gondwana, Euramerica, and Siberia during the Carboniferous, approximately 335 million years ago, and began to break apart about 200 million years ago, at the end of the Triassic and beginning of the Jurassic.
Since we approximately know when Atlantis sank, 9,600 BC, putting dates on Howard's stories is easy. Pangaea era is way too old. Men were not even born yet. The map of the world of Howard is pretty much the same as today. Climate systems and vegetation distribution were different, but the Earth hasn't changed that much. Starting at the last glacial maximum, say 20,000 BC, there was no forest in Europe. It was Arctic tundra, a bit like northern Canada. 10,000 years later, there were some forests, but not that much. Water was falling in North Africa more than in Europe. Some places were flooded like Doggerland and some rose. The one thing missing on the retarded map is the Mediterranean Sea. It was always there as the rest of the feature we see on modern map. Coastlines have changed a bit, but for the most parts, a 12,000-year-old map of the world looks a lot like a modern one.
Most of the territory in Howard's maps could be in a green Sahara region, in addition to a larger and colder southern Europe, with the retreat of the sea.
Another terrific convulsion of the Earth, carving out the lands as they are known to moderns, hurled all into chaos again. Great strips of the western coast sank. Vanaheim and western Asgard, uninhabited and glacier-haunted wastes for 100 years, vanished beneath the waves. The ocean flowed around the mountains of western Sumeria to form the North Sea. These mountains became the islands later known as England, Scotland, and Ireland, and the waves rolled over what had been the Pictish wilderness and the Bosonian marches. In the north, the Baltic Sea was formed, cutting Asgard into the peninsulas later known as Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. And far to the south, the Stygian continent was broken away from the rest of the world, on the line of cleavage formed by the river Nilus in its westward trend. Over Argos, western Koth, and the western lands of Shem, washed the blue ocean men later called the Mediterranean. But where land sank elsewhere, a vast expanse west of Stygia rose out of the waves, forming the whole western half of the continent of Africa. The Hyborian Age, Robert E. Howard. The Fantagraph. February, August, and October, November 1936 issues.
Europe was primeval forest, friend.
Not at the last glacial maximum. It was a tundra. Forests don't grow beside mile-high ice sheets, tundra does.
Ah, we're on the same page. I'm thinking 10,000 years ago, just after the actual glacial max.
Glacial max was 22 to 24,000 years ago. 12,000 ago was the end of the Younger Dryas, a mini ice age on its own that lasted a bit less than a millennia. By now, ice had been melting for 10,000 years.
I was going by this as well, but also, the last glacial period, LGP, occurred from the end of the Eemian to the end of the Younger Dryas, encompassing the period 115,000 to 11,700 years ago. This most recent glacial period is part of a larger pattern of glacial and interglacial periods known as the Quaternary Glaciation, extending from 2,588,000 years ago to present. The definition of the Quaternary as beginning 2.58 million years is based on the formation of the Arctic ice cap. The Antarctic ice sheet began to form earlier, at about 34 million years, in the mid-Cenozoic Eocene-Oligocene extinction event. The term Late Cenozoic Ice Age is used to include this early phase.
I like to wonder about ancient civilizations and the unknown history of mankind. Babylonian mythology mentions the destruction of Tiamat, which was a water planet. It could have been an icy asteroid instead of an actual planet. I think its destruction caused a lot of the debris to scatter towards Earth, where the chunks of ice were vaporized while entering the atmosphere. This would be a cause for the Great Flood in all world myths. There were supposedly pillars of water coming out of the Earth. I think this is from the Great Flood filling underground cave systems. And during this process, the cave systems eroded and caused land masses to sink below the sea. If this new source of water was slightly acidic, then it could have dissolved land masses and cave systems made of limestone. The landmass in this attached image is Dun Brist. The surface of this was once a part of a rolling field that spread far into what is now the ocean. How many civilizations were on those rolling hills that are now gone? The earth reclaims itself and plows under any signs of civilization.
What, says who, Sitchin?
Babylonian mythology. You have to read between the lines and realize that some Babylonian stories were retellings of significant global events.
Okay, what Anand is talking about is that Zechariah Sitchin, an old ancient astronaut theorist, thought that Tiamat wasn't a dragon but a planet whose destruction led to the creation of the Earth.
There's no evidence of this. Oftentimes there is truth to be teased out in mythology, but consider it to reflect more localized events rather than global. Your desire to find some sort of complete lost history of the planet is clouding your judgment somewhat, but you are on the right track in my opinion.
Except, it isn't just Babylonian texts saying it. Ancient Vedic text says the same things as well as myths from American natives. When you have myths around the world from distant civilizations saying the same things, they are probably telling you what actually happened.
The global flood myths were about climate change. Eden, for instance, is well understood to have been southeast of Ur, where the Persian Gulf now is. Similar for Lemuria and Mu, what's called Sundaland, when Indonesia was a landmass instead of islands.
The flood myths were retellings of a singular event. They weren't cautionary tales.
The emerging scientific consensus was the Hyperborean world was destroyed by several comet strikes 12,900 calendar years ago, causing massive rapid meltdown of ice caps and rising oceans 400 feet, drowning then existing coastal civilizations. Randall Carlson has a YouTube channel where he gives talks about this every week. It's very interesting.
The 400 feet rise is for the whole melting period, 20,000 years. You're grouping all the meltwater pulses in one when you say that. Meltwater pulse 1b, which is the deluge meltwater. Sea level rose 28 meters, 92 feet, in about 500 years, about 11,300 calendar years ago. And it's contested. They concluded that meltwater pulse 1b occurred between 11,500 and 11,200 calendar years ago, a 300 calendar year interval during which sea level rose 13 meters, 43 feet, from negative 58 meters, negative 190 feet, to negative 45 meters, negative 148 feet, giving a mean annual rate of around 40 millimeters per year. Other studies have revised the estimated magnitude of meltwater pulse 1b downward to between 7.5 meters, 25 feet, and less than 6 meters, 20 feet. The same goes for the megafauna extinction, most of which happened at the start of the Younger Dryas. There were more extinctions before and after the end of the Younger Dryas.
The bulk of the meltwater occurred in two gigantic pulses at the start and end of the Younger Dryas periods. The latter pulse was the serious one, and if I recall correctly, it was when the Bonneville floods happened which tore up the American Northwest. Both pulses occurred simultaneously to drastic Younger Dryas temperature changes, rapid cooling in beginning, and rapid warming at end. The release of Ice Age cap meltwater was not gradual over 20,000 years, but happened in large pulses twice. It takes enormous energy to cause such rapid melting, and the only thing that would bring such energy is comet strikes, So the hypothesis is that both 1A and 1B melts were precipitated by comet strikes on the ice caps causing the meltdown.
Slow melt beats pulses. Numbers are not definitive, but if you add the pulses, slow melt did most of the melting at best. Meltwater pulses did half the job. Meltwater Pulse 1A, MWP-1A, is the name used by quaternary geologists, paleoclimatologists, and oceanographers for a period of rapid post-glacial sea level rise between 13,500 and 14,700 years ago, during which global sea level rose between 16 meters, 52 feet, and 25 meters, 82 feet, in about 400 to 500 years. They concluded that Meltwater Pulse 1B occurred between 11,500 and 11,200 calendar years ago, a 300 calendar year interval, during which sea level rose 13 meters, 43 feet. Meltwater Pulse 1C between 8.2 to 7.6 thousand years ago, centered at 8.0 thousand years ago, a rise of 6.5 m in less than 140 years.
There comes a time, thief, when the jewels cease to sparkle, when the gold loses its luster, when the throne room becomes a prison, and all that is left is a father's love for his child.
I hope that you enjoyed tonight's broadcast. If you enjoyed tonight's story, then please subscribe to the channel as more green texts will appear daily. A new broadcast will appear when the clock strikes midnight Central Time.